So looking at today's lesson, interesting combination of topics. Starts out on Lord Ganesha. Lord Ganesha, the god of time and memory, strategically seated on the Muladhara chakra, poised between the higher and lower chakras, stabilizes all sentient beings. So, I think the key word there is stability. And we all want to be stable, have our lives go along smoothly without extreme ups and downs, either emotional or intellectual or financial or whatever. We want stability. So, Lord Ganesha helps that occur in our lives. And one of the reasons is he keeps us from falling lower than the Muladhara chakra, falling into fear or anger. It's usually as low as anyone we know goes. Don't get down to the bottom. We don't know people that go around killing people for enjoyment. It's just the bottom. So usually people just go down into fear or anger. And he prevents that by being there and catching us. So one of the reasons many years ago Gurudeva felt that the practice of devotion and the worship of Lord Ganesha was important because he noticed instability in those he was teaching meditation to without a foundation of bhakti. They'd be soaring along in these wonderful states of mind, and then a few weeks later, they're in these terrible states of fear and doubt and can't even remember the beautiful inner states they had. You try and remind them and say, oh, remember last 2 weeks ago you had these beautiful inner light experiences? And they say, no, I didn't. I didn't do that. No stability. So up and down in consciousness all over the place. One of the problems with drugs is that it makes that kind of experience worse. You go way up, and then on the reaction, you go way down. So we want stability. We want to stay above these lower states of mind, stay above these extreme fluctuations. So Lord Ganesha helps that, and his worship helps that, and to be more specific, not just his existence, but worshiping him in a sincere way helps us stay above these lower states of mind of fear and anger. Also helps us calm down any emotional states of mind we might be in. If we're upset emotionally about something, whatever it is, the worship of Lord Ganesha helps stabilize that. So thinking about Ganesha brought another idea to mind, which is that, of course, we always like to think about the highest realizations, the highest experiences, deep thoughts, our oneness with Shiva, inner light, high-minded principles, which is good. But we also need to think about our weaknesses, our flaws. Maybe we speak too abruptly. Maybe we get angry. Maybe we're impatient. We also need to think about our shortcomings and improving them. It's just not enough to think about the high-minded truths. We also have to work on the weak points. So it's like someone, Gurudeva used to talk about dancing, and you pay someone to correct you. Now you're wanting them to tell you what you're doing wrong. You're wanting them to point out your weak point. You don't want them to sit there and praise you for everything you're doing right. You don't want them to say, oh, you're the best dancer I've ever had. No, you're paying them money, and you don't want to hear that. You want to hear you're doing this wrong, this wrong, and this wrong, and this is how you can improve it. So move forward, once you get up to a certain standard, someone has to point out your weak points, or you have to point them out to yourself and decide to improve them. So the spiritual path is just like dancing in that regard, as Gurudeva mentioned on many occasions. So Lord Ganesha can help us see our weak points and improve them. Maybe our weak point is something as simple as we tend to create inharmonious conditions. Tend to stir things up. Why? Well, we're kind of bored inside, and when things are stirred up, it's more interesting. Lots of people live in that state of mind. It's just kind of, if everything's quiet and peaceful and sublime, it's boring because they don't have an inner life. So they stir it up a little bit on the outside, keep things interesting, and keep from getting bored. So harmony is very important. And the first Shakti of Lord Ganesha, of course, is harmony in the home, and monastery is a home. So maintaining harmony is the foundation or the first step. If we don't have harmony in the home, if we don't have harmony in the monastery, forget about anything more. You can't build upon inharmonious conditions and create something more refined. It's not possible. So the worship of Lord Ganesha always reminds us of the first Shakti, the five Shaktis, the first of which is harmony in the home, and how central that is to all our spiritual endeavors and how valuable it is. There's nothing more valuable than harmony in the home. It's priceless, because without it, nothing else really works right. All our other activities tend to be significantly inhibited when we don't have harmony in the home. So that's Lord Ganesha. Living with Shiva. Monastics are the religious leaders of Hinduism. Continuing this noble renunciate monastic tradition is essential for the perpetuation of the faith. Therefore, when a young boy expresses a desire to become a monk, parents should never discourage that inclination, but strongly encourage it in all ways. It is a great blessing for the family to have a son become a sannyasin. Goes on about that. So, you can't put a classified in the newspaper, monks wanted. It's more subtle than that. But monks are wanted, definitely. Did a calculation the other day and calculated we need to bring in a new monk every 2 years just to keep the monastery the same size. So monks are wanted. If any family wants to conceive and raise a monk, we encourage it. Of course, you can't raise a monk if you haven't conceived a monk. So it's important to think about it first. And a wonderful story. Swami Vivekananda, before he was conceived, his mother for a long time had a vrata every Monday. I think she went to the Shiva temple and worshipped for a son, a special son. And then he was conceived. So, you know, she thought about it well in advance. So that's the advice Gurudeva gives also in living with Shiva, that if you're thinking about raising a son for the monastery, think about it before conceiving the child, and not afterwards. Think about before conceiving the child and worship and pray and have that in mind when the child is conceived. And then it's much more likely when it's approached that way that you'll actually raise a son who ends up in the monastery. It's not enough for the parents to want the son in the monastery. The son also has to want to be in the monastery. Otherwise it doesn't work out right. So we have an invisible want ad. Monks want it, apply here. The next one, maturing the soul body. It's a really nice, tangible way to think about spiritual unfoldment. I'm spiritually unfolding, I'm spiritually advancing. What does that mean? So the idea of maturing the soul body gives us something tangible to think about. Spiritual unfoldment, advancing spiritually, means our soul body is maturing. We know what it means for a physical body to mature. So the soul body, in the same way, matures, meaning it develops. It becomes more, it becomes stronger. It's like a light that becomes brighter. A light that becomes more cohesively tied together. Emotional body is a good comparison because the physical body, the way it matures, it gets old. So that doesn't quite work when you think about the soul body, because the soul body doesn't get old in the same way as the physical body does. When the soul body gets old, it gets even better. So the emotional body is a good comparison. So when we're very young, of course, we cry. Our emotions are such that almost everything sets us off to crying. And so we need to be protected by the parents. But as parents know, as the child gets older, crying becomes less. And the child is able to handle more difficult situations and doesn't have to run to mother as often and so forth. And the child gets up to a certain age and doesn't cry unless something serious happens. So that's an example of one of our bodies, in this case the emotional body, maturing. We get better control over it. So the soul body is the same way, a body of light that we get better control of. We're able to use it in a more controlled way. It doesn't react the way it does when it's young. It's like something on, it's like a out of focus television set that you gradually focus so the image becomes sharp. That would be like maturing the soul body. So it starts out kind of out of focus, not a sharp image, and it becomes more and more focused until it's a really well-defined image. So that's the idea of maturing the soul body. And it's what moves from life to life. So it doesn't go away, because that's who we really are. Everything else goes away around it eventually, or comes and goes, like the physical body. We take on a physical body, we drop it off, we take one on, we drop it off. You can't drop off the soul body because that's who you really are. What surrounds it comes and goes, eventually drops off, but that's always there. You have to go into final merger in order for that to not be there anymore, which means you're really mature when you get to that point. So that's the real us. That's what spiritually unfolds, and that's what we take from life to life, and that's our real wealth. Can't take money with you. Can't take ideas with you. The one thing you can take from life to life is the maturity of your soul body. So, when all is said and done, you know, how much have you advanced your soul body? That's the real bottom line of any life, because that's the only thing you take that's permanent from one life to the next. All other things end up dropping off, so that means it's valuable because it's the real you. So that's what's worth investing in, the maturity of your soul body.